joining me for this week's Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and ultimately successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful instant when you can jump up and down and shout, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in the best program for you. Over the last several weeks, I've seen reports of some very interesting surveys and research being done by Kaplan Test Prep on the GRE and the GMAT. I also saw a recent survey, or results of a recent survey, sponsored by ETS on the GRE's validity in business school admissions. We'll get to both these topics in just a few minutes when I interview Kaplan's director of GMAT and GRE programs. But first, I'd like to address a question posed on Accepted's Facebook page at facebook.com/accepted. And the question was very simple. I got accepted at Hult International Business School, just concerned whether I should go on for the course or not. And actually, there's a question mark at the end. It's not really a statement. Now, frankly, there's no way I can answer that question or even express an opinion because that was all the information I had about the applicant. And my question, given the lack of information, would be the same whether you would be talking about Hult or its Boston neighbor, Harvard. Here's how I respond with a little more information now than I gave in my message back on Facebook. But it's basically the same. Please keep in mind that these are the factors to think about, not just when you get an acceptance. They're even better thought about before you apply, because that way you'll make sure you're applying to programs you want to attend. So you need to examine the following six factors. Number one, the school's placement record for the kinds of jobs you want to get post your degree, whether it's an MBA, a law degree, whatever kind of degree it is. Let's assume it's MBA, or whatever degree you are seeking. It's not just the overall placement record that counts. It's a placement record, again, in the industry and function that you are most interested in. Two, the curriculum. Are you going to learn and study what you want to study and need to study in the way you want to learn it? Okay, don't ignore the in-class experience. Three, extracurricular activities that support your goals and that you will enjoy. Very simple. Four, personal preferences. And those can relate to the size of the school, the location, the student body, the needs of your significant other, proximity to family, all kinds of things. Five, your alternatives if you do not attend this program or apply for this degree program or whatever. And that's probably the one that's most relevant later on down the decision-making process. And six, the cost. Does the likely benefit of obtaining this education exceed the known cost? If you research these factors before you apply, you will be in great shape when dealing with acceptances, and you will also have a much more thoughtful answer to an essay or interview question asking why you want to attend Top Choice U. Quick reminder, if you have an admissions-related question that you would like me to address, just go to the show notes at info.accepted.com/78, and you will see a widget that will allow you to leave an audio message in which you can ask your question. You can speak using your computer mic or your phone. You can also send me questions via email at questions@accepted.com. If your question is chosen, I'll ask and answer it on the show. Oh, and FYI, if you just want to ask your question in a comment on the blog or in our social media, facebook.com/accepted, or on twitter.com/accepted, or just at accepted, Google Plus, whatever it is, we'd be delighted to answer it. We're developing a wonderful and thoughtful community on Accepted, so feel free to comment there. I'm delighted to have Arthur Ott, Senior Manager, Grad Product Development at Kaplan Test Prep, with me on the show today. After graduating from SUNY Buffalo, Arthur joined Kaplan Test Prep as an instructor and then as a master teacher and product manager for pre-business programs. Since 2010, he has been Kaplan's Senior Manager, Grad Product Development. As I mentioned earlier, I have been intrigued by various surveys Kaplan has produced lately, and Arthur is the man to talk to about them, as well as to discuss Grad Test Prep. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. Arthur, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
Great. You're most welcome. How did you get involved in the test prep biz, and what does the senior product manager at Kaplan do?
Sure. So my quick personal story is that I actually looked to get into test prep by just getting experience about what it would be like to be a high school instructor. So Kaplan seemed like a great place to sort of get that experience. Quickly realized it's a little bit different because as an instructor in our test prep courses, the students and I are actually on the same side. The students look at the test as the enemy. I'm there to say it's not really the enemy. It's just an obstacle that just needs to be overcome, and I'm going to be the person to help them with that. So not exactly the same experience as I might have if I were a high school instructor, but definitely still very rewarding. I've been doing this for about 10 years now, and even though my role as a product manager keeps me very busy at Kaplan, I certainly do still try to find time whenever I can to teach some of our classroom courses as well for both GRE and GMAT and even some of the pre-college courses as well.
Well, I bet you don't have classroom management problems in these courses, right?
I'm fortunate not to because, again, the students ultimately recognize that I'm there to help.
Right. Can you give a brief overview of what Kaplan offers applicants in terms of test prep for the GRE and the GMAT?
Sure. So Kaplan offers comprehensive programs for both the GRE and the GMAT, as well as other standardized exams for admission to various graduate school programs. We believe our programs are, you're going to get the most bang for your buck, really, in terms of the breadth of resources that we have. Our classroom courses contain both instructional hours where you're in front of a teacher, either in a live setting or, as many students prefer, being in an online classroom environment as well. We offer over thousands of practice questions and different resources, video workshops, quizzes, everything to sort of reinforce the idea that we teach everything that's on the test and we will not teach you anything that's not on the test. So all of those resources kind of come together. Kaplan's also unique in that we offer what we call the higher score guarantee, which is basically, when I talk to students, I often talk to them as the higher score guarantee as sort of that reassurance, because if our students don't improve on their scores, then they can get their money back. That's what we mean by the higher score guarantee. Even if the students improve but are looking to improve even more, they can retake our course for free. So it's that safety net. We understand that a lot of our students are taking a big plunge in terms of time commitments, financial commitments for the course, and it's our way of basically saying we understand and respect the decision, and we appreciate your decision to prep with us, and we want to offer that to you as a way to make you feel reassured that you're getting the best test prep possible. It's our commitment, basically, to their goals.
Okay, great. Now, what are some of the main differences between the GMAT and the GRE? And I'm not talking about difference in price. The GRE is less expensive. To the test taker, the person preparing for an exam, what are some of the big differences?
Sure. So in terms of the exams content, they're somewhat similar. The GMAT and the GRE have slightly different question formats. But overall, you have both tests. The main focus of both exams is a quantitative reasoning section and a verbal reasoning section, some variability with the number of questions. For instance, the GMAT has one quantitative section that's 37 questions and one verbal section that's 41 questions, whereas the GRE will have two quantitative sections and two verbal sections, and all those sections are 20 questions long. So some variability there. In terms of, as I mentioned before, about question content, similar, but on the verbal section of the GRE, there's a little bit more of an emphasis on not strict, like, rote vocabulary exercises, but certainly having a strong vocabulary is going to be crucial to succeeding on the GRE verbal section, whereas on the GMAT, there's not a lot of vocabulary tested at all, frankly, but more in terms of grammar, for example. The GMAT has a sentence correction question type where you have a sentence and part of that sentence is underlined and your job is to find which which is the best way to fix the underlying portion of the sentence. So again, both exams have that verbal reasoning component to it, but they just test it in slightly different ways.
Mm-hmm.
On the quantitative section, content-wise, very similar. High school level algebra, arithmetic, geometry. Fortunately, for many folks who will hopefully breathe a sigh of relief, there's no calculus, there's no differential equations, nothing of that sort. But again, the GMAT will have a unique question type called data sufficiency, whereas the GRE will have a question type called quantitative comparison. Quantitative comparison is simply asking the test taker, are the two values, are the two things that are being represented, is there a way to figure out is one larger than the other? And they'll throw various different things like variables and, you know, people's different rates and things like that. And, you know, your job is to sort of dissect that information just to see if one is larger than the other or if it's not even feasible to figure out which one is larger. On the GMAT, you have data sufficiency where the question is asking what that question type is. Is there enough data to sufficiently answer the question? Not what is the answer, but can the answer be found?
Mm-hmm.
If the answer can be found, well, that's the answer to that question. So it's a little bit different, right? I think most people think of math, it's always like, what is X or what is the value or how much did so-and-so make in 2 months, right? But data sufficiency, very much like just analyzing, is the information present sufficient to be able to answer the question?
Of course, you almost have to solve the problem to figure out if it is sufficient.
In many cases, yes. In many cases,
no.
One of the biggest traps is that a test taker will look at the data sufficiency question and solve it all the way down to X equals so-and-so.
That's taking a lot
really
of time.
The question is simply asking, what is X? And if you can figure out what is X, you, without having to do the calculations, you'll have saved yourself a good minute or two on that question, which can certainly add up as you're going through the exam.
Is there more time pressure on one or the other exam?
On the GMAT, if you look purely at number of questions and time per question, the GMAT will average approximately 2 minutes per question. The GRE averages slightly more, closer to 2.5 minutes per question.
Mm-hmm.
It's still pretty big time crunch.
And if you have, I guess on the GRE, you're also more likely to have to do those calculations, so you need that additional time. Am I correct?
Both exams will allow, on the quantitative sections, will allow use of an on-screen calculator. So you mm-hmm. can't bring your own calculator to the test room, but mm-hmm. it is part of the user interface when you're taking the exam. It's a way for, I think, both For the GRE, there is a calculator that's allowed on the quantitative sections. The GMAT does not allow a calculator on the quantitative section. So therefore, the GRE, it's one of the ways that they want to make the test a little bit feel a little bit friendlier, is the way that they put it, to make it feel less intimidating. In some ways, yes, it can be less intimidating just by knowing that there's access to a calculator. But in some ways, in the GMAT side, it's a little bit more reassuring to know that you won't have to do some intense number crunching. In that way, right? It's kind of like the analogy I like to use when I'm teaching is it's kind of like an open book test, for instance, right? I mean, like some people will prefer the open book test because they know the answer is somewhere in there. Some people prefer like, okay, well, I know the teacher said I'm going to be tested on these limited number of objectives. And if I can get what those limited objectives are, then I will do well. So it's, you know.
Our open book test can be a little bit of a trap. If you're spending your time in the book, you're in trouble.
Exactly.
Right. Now, isn't also there a difference in terms of being able to go back and correct or check your work between the GMAT and the GRE?
So the GRE is what's called a section adaptive test. So
mm-hmm.
that means, and I'll discuss adaptive in a little bit, but section adaptive means when you're with the test will get more difficult at the section level. If you perform very well on the first section of your GRE, then your next section will be more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is for a GRE test taker, within the section, you are allowed to go back, you're allowed to skip questions. The GRE user interface actually allows the test taker test taker to mark questions that the student decides to simply mark or just not or not complete at that moment, and then go back and see which questions they want to finish. The GMAT is adaptive at the question level, which means if you get one question right, then the next question is dependent on there are many factors, but one of the factors is, did you get the previous question right or wrong? Sure. If you got it right, well, then the next question will likely be a little bit more difficult. So since the next question that you get depends at least partially on whether you got the previous question right or wrong, you can't go back. You can't go back, and you can't skip forward either on the GMAT.
Right, right. And that, I mean, yeah, and ETS makes a big deal of the ability to go back, but it's a limited ability. It's not like you can finish an hour and then go back to what you did an hour ago. It's within sections, as you said. Okay. Now, I understand that Kaplan surveyed 152 admissions officers from U.S. News-ranked programs in education, engineering, psych, and public administration in July and August. And one of the results indicated the biggest application killer is a low GRE score. 41% listed the GRE as the application killer and versus 27% for the GPA, which I think was the next closest. Why do you think the GRE is more critical, according to these admissions officers, than the undergraduate GPA, which frankly is more like taking class, you know, what they're going to be doing, and also reflects work over a period of time?
Sure. So the admission you mentioned the survey.
Right.
This is a survey that we do every year to make sure that students have the most accurate, up-to-date information on the admissions process. Just basically make sure that what students are hearing on the ground, so to speak, is mm-hmm. the correct information. We want to make sure we get that out there to prospective students. So why is the GRE more critical than undergraduate GPA? There are a lot of different factors at play. One of them is that the GRE is the most objective measurement.
Right.
In order to compare candidate one versus candidate two versus candidate three, there's naturally going to be some subjectivity, even with something like undergraduate GPA, depending on the school that that a prospective applicant went to. You're going to have some level of subjectivity. Is that GPA? The GPA is a number, but sometimes that number does not reflect the depth of coursework, for instance, like how many of those classes were higher level electives, for example. So there's some of that. And then, of course, there are other admissions factors, which are important, no doubt. The interviews or business schools often ask for resumes. Almost all programs will ask for personal statements. All these factors are important, but the GRE, we believe, is more critical because it is that objective measurement.
Right.
Additionally, one of the other survey questions that we asked was, what's the number one application killer for an admissions officer? So an admissions officer is seeing all these different things in the application, again, personal statements, interview feedback, undergraduate GPA and transcript, all those things. The GRE or the GMAT is the number one admission application killer. About 50% of the schools that we 50% of the schools that we surveyed said that was number one, and it makes sense because that number sticks out a lot, and it's used as a comparison tool for so many schools that when you have so much qualitative data to look at, schools will need some sort of quantitative measure, some sort of purely objective measure to assess candidates, and that's why that GRE is going to be critical, even more so than undergraduate GPA. And also you consider you have many students, many folks who apply to graduate schools having not taken college-level classes for many years. So.
Right.
There's going to be some level of subjectivity there. Is that person truly prepared to go back into a full-time academic pursuit as opposed to someone with maybe a slightly lower GPA but is just graduated from college and so they're still in that academic mindset? So, again, a lot of subjectivity there.
Right. And conversely, you could have somebody who's been away from school for a few years, 3, 4, 5 years, particularly in the MBA world, and they goofed off their freshman year. So their GPA took a hit. Well, is that what they did, you know, 8 years ago as an 18-year-old really reflective of who they are today as a 26, 27, or 28-year-old? So that it can work both ways in that regard. And I think there's also, just to answer my own question a little bit, especially with the GMAT, I think less so with the GRE, correct me if you disagree, there's bragging rights associated with a high average GMAT score for a particular school. And that's what alumni look at, that's what donors look at, that's what prospective students look at. You know,
the rankings for, you know,
sure,
top business school programs, one of the biggest factors is going to be the average GMAT score for their entering class. So certainly schools will – it's very competitive, as you might imagine, business school students. You have plenty of type A, go get them personalities.
Yeah. we both know.
Of course, right. So every 5 to 10 point increase that a business school can sort of tout for their program is gonna reflect on increased rankings, increased prestige of their programs, recognition of their programs. We don't see that as much with GRE, but certainly in other fields, maybe not so much business related fields, but certainly fields, some of those that you'd mentioned before about education, engineering, psychology. The rankings for those programs are based, one of the factors that those rankings are based on are GRE scores as well.
Right. And again, if the school can claim, you know, our average GRE is 325, I don't know, some very high GRE score, then the assumption is that they are attracting the best and the brightest, and if applicants want to be among the best and the brightest, they're going to get more applications, they're going to see more exclusive, alumni are going to donate more, you know, all kinds of good things are going to happen.
And I think
that is another factor that makes the GRE and the GMAT just really important numbers and application killers, as your survey pointed out. Now, before we move on to focus more on the GMAT and the business school world exclusively for a minute, a couple more questions in the grad arena. Do you think that in terms of the GRE being an application killer or perhaps winner, resuscitator, I don't know, do you think it's a total score that counts, or do you think it's a little bit specialty dependent? So, for example, if one is applying to a graduate program in engineering or computer science, obviously the quant score is going to be, particularly for engineering, the quant score is going to be far more important than the verbal. Or if you're applying to a program in education or the non-statistical part of psychology or English lit, for example, obviously the verbal score will be far more important than the quant. What do you believe on that question? What do you know?
The data that we got, the survey, is meant to be an aggregate, essentially.
Yeah.
But certainly each program, each admissions officer may have his or her own preference.
Right.
We do know that a lot of programs, for instance, will tout, in an engineering program, for instance, many schools will sort of tout just their quant average GRE score, which is certainly not unexpected, right, since each section gets its own score to begin with. But remember that the GRE covers a wide variety of different programs.
Yes.
For instance, when I look at veterinary schools.
I was thinking of that exactly. That's exactly what came to my mind, yeah.
And I'm not entirely sure, to be quite frank, both are essential for just being able to study at that high level in a PhD or in any sort of high-level program. But, you know, the analogy I often like to use is like, for someone's favorite pet, which will be more important? Will it be about knowing the rules of triangles or having a strong vocabulary? I'm not entirely sure, to be honest, but it is important because it's important to one thing I did want to mention, like a lot of people do look at the GRE as sort of like this math test and this verbal test.
Mm-hmm.
And really what it's meant to be, it's a reasoning test. It's a reasoning test that certainly uses math abilities and verbal abilities, but there's a reason why ETS calls these sections the quantitative reasoning section, the verbal reasoning section, because it's not just about having this large vocabulary. You could memorize 10,000 words between now and when you take the GRE, and there's actually no guarantee that any of those words, I know this sounds kind of scary at first, but there's no guarantee that any of those thousands and thousands of words you studied will actually show up on that test. So it's not pure rote vocabulary memorization, but it's the ability to, for instance, in text completion or sentence equivalence, which are the more vocabulary-intensive question types on the GRE, it's about being able to break down words. Do you recognize at least certain prefixes or roots or, even some basic etymologies of words? That can help you understand the meaning of the overall sentence.
Sure.
So that's why, again, it's so much more about reasoning rather than purely just memorizing content. So to go back to the point, a lot of programs, again, overall score is what will count for many programs. They will value one over the other. But on the other hand, I mean, even for a top engineering program where they're like, yes, all we really care about is the quantitative score, and you bring a perfect quantitative score, but you bring a noticeably subpar verbal score, it's still going to stick out. It's still there. Like, the admissions officer can't unsee it. So they need to be able to perform well, to the standards, or as I like to encourage, surpass the standards that the schools that they're applying to are looking for. But at the same time, some balance is absolutely necessary.
Right. I was thinking also of a younger relative of mine who ultimately won. I think he did extraordinarily well, but he was struggling with the verbal on the GRE. He was doing great on the quant. He had good grades, and he was going into a technical graduate program. And he just could not get the verbal. And he, his mom called me and said, what do you think? Should he take it again? I really don't think he's going to raise a score. He studied very hard. He did his best. And I said, look, if you don't think he's going to raise his score, and he had historically struggled with all kinds of verbal issues, I said, don't torture him. I don't see any point. I don't think you should torture himself. I don't think you should encourage him to do so. And he'll just get in with the best place he could, because his quant score was super high. And he did extraordinarily well. He got into all the schools except one that he applied to, and including, major, the kind of schools that most people walk over hot coals to get into. So in his specialty, it just wasn't that. They were willing to overlook the verbal. The irony is that he's actually very, very articulate. If he has to write a business memo, blog post in his field, he's writing all the time. And he once, as a high school student, did some work for me and made a recommendation and wrote like this. As a 17-year-old kid, he wrote this memo to me. And I was like, whoa, that is incredibly well laid out, thoughtful, organized. But, in terms of those exams, he just couldn't do it. So they're not perfect, and apparently, again, he's doing very, very well as a young professional right now, but whatever. What are your top three? Let's get back to the interview. What are your top three GRE prep tips?
Top three tips. Let's see. First, I would say, and this is one that a lot of people do neglect, but we do encourage people to take a prep course, or at least look at prep material for the GRE. Secondly, take a practice test. We know that a lot of people who are taking the GRE, it's been a long time since they've seen a standardized test. Even the fact that it's on a computer is still quite foreign to a lot of test takers. So taking a practice test, taking it on the computer, taking it in the what the GRE calls multi-stage test format, or MST format, is crucial just to get familiarity with what the exam is like. And thirdly, and again, if it's been a while since someone has been in an academic setting, take a tough English course, or take a review course in some of that math content if they don't have time to commit to a full test prep course. But one thing that's just helpful is just reading a lot, especially on the verbal component.
Right.
I I tell students up until test day, read something of a at a high level, read something that's outside of your personal interest. And I do say that honestly because the GRE will not give you reading passages that are interesting necessarily. They won't necessarily interest you. It's odd how we read something, we're much more engaged with something we read when we have a personal interest in it. But
amazing.
But you may not have a personal interest in the passages that you'll see on the GRE. So you just get used to just reading things that are out of your wheelhouse, out of the things that you would normally read, and just read at that high level.
Okay, great. Now let's move on to a little bit more B-School focus. This past couple of months have been kind of a tough time, I think, for GMAT and GMAC. On September 3rd, ETS released the results of its validity study of the GRE and B-School admissions, and it claims that the study shows the GRE is a valid predictor of success in B-School. Now, that was the first piece of, I think, less than great news that GMAC got. We'll get the second piece in a minute, which actually comes from Kaplan. But in your opinion, who should be taking, if I'm an applicant to business school, all the business schools that I am applying to accept both the GMAT and the GRE, and they claim that they have no preference for either of the two exams, which is the case for most business schools now, which one should I take? What would you recommend? And if it's a case of, well, if, you know, if you're in this and this and this category, take the GMAT. If you're in this category, take the GRE. How would you categorize it?
Yeah, it's a great question. We know that if all things equal, right, if the school says that we do not have any sort of preference whatsoever of submitting a GMAT score versus a GRE score, then we would probably say to that potential student, to that applicant, take a practice GMAT, take a practice GRE. See which one you feel more comfortable with. Not even necessarily which one do you perform better on, because you never know, right? One exam is just sort of taking it blind. You'd be like, well, I did slightly better on this exam, but I felt so much better, so much more comfortable with the content and the format of the other exam. That might be the signal right there that, you know what, I can do better on that other exam. Whether it's GMAT or GRE, in either case. We also do highly recommend for applicants to call the schools. Even if they accept both, they may indicate a preference one over the other. We know that, for instance, a lot of business schools started accepting the GRE as a way to draw in more non-traditional MBA candidates. You know, the old guard of the GMAT world was people who had business backgrounds or finance backgrounds or economics backgrounds, and so of course they were ready to go in there and go through the quant and verbal sections of the GMAT. But the GRE presents questions in a slightly different way that it could be a little bit more appealing to, for instance, folks looking to do entrepreneurship that don't have those classic backgrounds in business or finance. So, again, just getting exposed to what is on the test, getting exposed to the content, the format of the test is crucial to make that decision about which test should I take. And, again, even if schools say they accept both, maybe they do have a preference. In our recent survey with business school admissions officers, about 20% did indicate that the GMAT would be looked upon more favorably than the GRE. So there's still that culture there that the GMAT is the test for business school admissions. Prospective business school students, again, as we mentioned before, type A personalities, go get them folks. You know, they're always going to look for some sort of edge or some sort of advantage. So you know that those folks will be like, well, if all things equal, I'm definitely taking the GMAT. But, again, I would strongly suggest take a practice test in both, see which one you feel you can do better on.
Okay. Now, I was wondering, I've been wondering this for a long time, if Kaplan has any intention, or if any of the test prep companies for that matter, but I'm talking to you right now, of like attempting to survey the students who take the GRE and apply to business school, and the students who take the GMAT and apply to business school, and see if applicants with a lower or higher percentile are accepted at different programs and attempt to assess whether, not just based on what the schools say, but in terms of their behavior, whether there is a preference for one exam or the other. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely. We are actually currently in the process of surveying our students, surveying our GMAT students in particular, to find out if they ever considered taking the GRE for business school. I mean, they're already in our GMAT classes, but this more recent information that we're trying to gather was based largely on this question was sort of brought on by the information that we got from our survey. So we are in that process right now of collecting data from our current GMAT students, see if they ever thought about taking the GRE for business school. We asked this several years ago, and at that time, very few folks did. And partially because very few folks even knew of that option. But now we do want to see if that has changed, if people are more actively choosing the GMATs over the GRE, or if it's still a case of, oh, wait, I could do that? We're wondering, like, which one of those cases it is. And for more students, I think for more students to take the GRE, it will require a cultural change, right, a business school culture change. And they're making some rounds on that now, but it's still a relatively new phenomenon.
We're seeing more of it. We're seeing definitely more MBA applicants applying with the GRE. And there have been, I think Yale has about 20% of its applicant pool applying with the GRE. And I think the most recent stat I saw was that overall 10% of the B school applicant pool applies with the GRE. I don't know, what your internal stats are. But what I was referring to was something a little different, where not so much how many of the applicants are considering both, but if the results in terms of acceptances are different. That would, I think, be a very, very interesting survey. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. That's a different twist on it. Because if GRE applicants are advantaged, let's say because their scores are not calculated in the GMAT average, and that's what schools use for bragging rights, then one could argue, well, if you have good grades and you can't go in with a strong GMAT, go in with a even a mediocre GRE. Conversely, if you have this really nice, high, shiny GMAT, if you can get one, go with a GMAT because schools will want to have these bragging rights.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a really interesting point to look at the changes, how this sort of shift has it already sort of taken place. The reality is right now it would probably be
not enough data.
It would likely be too early to get that sort of data because we still look at the most recent GMAT test change in 2012 when they added the integrated reasoning section. You're still looking at folks who took the GMAT, mid 2012. They're probably still in business school right now. So we really don't know if we'd have substantive data. Certainly something that we'd love to know, perhaps, in addition to surveying business schools and graduate schools and prospective students, we also do alumni surveys. So that might be a very interesting way to bring that up. The other thing is because, again, there's so many other factors.
Yeah.
There's is it correlation or is it causation, right?
Right.
Or is it
coincidence, right.
Right?
Right.
So there's some of that too. But certainly, it will be interesting to see over the next few years as we are able to see more and more people who finished business school with a GRE and said, "Hey, I got into so and so field. I got into so and so program. I got into so and so company." It will be very interesting to see that. And we imagine.
Yeah, I think that would be fascinating data. All right. So your comment about the IR really leads to my next question. And that is, I think the second piece of somewhat troubling news for GMAC came in the form of Kaplan survey, which it released on October 9th. And the results show that 60% of admissions officers in full-time business schools or in business school say that the IR, the integrated reasoning section, is not currently an important part of their evaluation of a prospective student's overall GMAT score, which is a small increase from 57% in 2013. Now, as you pointed out, the integrated reasoning section was introduced in 2012. Why are most schools not using it? Is it just because they still have an applicant pool that some have the IR and some don't have the IR? I mean...
Yeah, the major thing is that since the section is still relatively new and GMAT test scores are good for 5 years, so even this coming fall, this coming winter, when folks are applying for round two for business school applications, you're going to have many candidates who are submitting GMAT score reports that include integrated reasoning and some that don't. So it's very difficult to make that sort of apples to apples comparison. Well, you can't really make it, I guess, the apples to apples comparison at all at this point. We think that that will change over the next few years, especially when we can start making strict specific comparisons of candidates based on their integrated reasoning scores. And the other thing to consider is that even if, you know, it's still a data point. So similar to how an engineering program may say, we don't care. They may not say it exactly this way, but they may say, oh, we don't really care about about your verbal reasoning score. We just care about your quantitative reasoning score. But it's still a data point. It's still on the application. It's something that they can't unsee, right? So a subpar performance on integrated reasoning cannot be fully masked by a great performance on the GMAT quant and verbal. So as strong as the total score might be, that integrated reasoning score will be there. And you just want, you know, the analogy I like to use with students is sort of putting them in the mindset of an admissions officer. You never want the admissions officer to say, interesting, right? Like you don't want that at all, right?
No.
Someone brings like a 720, you know, or a 730, like 94th or 95th percentile score.
And a 3 on the IR.
Yeah, you just don't want to bring up any sort of questions, right, for that admissions. You want to make that admissions officer life easier. And the way to make it easier is to have consistent performance across all parts of the exam, including integrated reasoning.
Absolutely. Now, what are your top three tips for GMAT test takers? I assume one is take a practice.
Yeah, well, definitely. I would say, and again, these tips aren't necessarily exclusive for GMAT. These are certainly applicable for GRE as well. But just understanding the slight differences in the mentalities of our GMAT students and our GRE students, I guess for those who are looking to take the GMAT exam, one, give yourself a long enough runway. Particularly, I think, for GMAT, but people underestimate how much time they're going to need and how much time they want to prep for the GMAT. The rule of thumb that we used to say was about 100 to 120 hours based on average preparation time for successful GMAT testers. When integrated reasoning launched, that realistically added more time. So now we estimate around 120 to 150 hours, which for most people, you're looking at 3 months of dedicated preparation for the GMAT. So that would be tip number one, just give yourself that time. A lot of folks go into studying for the GMAT saying, I can knock this out in a week. And then they quickly realize, wow, it's a very different way of thinking, just purely about thinking. It's not just, I know I mentioned this as an example before, it's in a very lighthearted manner, but it's not just about knowing the properties of a triangle, right? That there are three sides in a triangle, that the angles add up to 180 degrees, that you have something called Pythagorean theorem, which I didn't really like learning about back then in high school, and wow, now I have to learn about it again for the GMAT. But it's not just about that, just again, knowing the format, knowing all the different nuances that these questions have will require a significant amount of preparation, more than I think most people estimate at first. So I guess that's my first big tip, particularly for GMAT, for those who are looking to take the GMAT. Secondly, mentioned this already, but learning both the content and the strategy. You know, one of the biggest misperceptions about the GMAT, it's all about tips and tricks. And then you have the other side where a lot of people think it's all about pure math and grammar rules. And if I memorize those things, I'm going to do great. Again, the GMAT tests critical thinking above all else. So, practicing those different approaches to questions. And third, honestly, it's just to maintain a positive attitude. You know, again, 3 months sounds daunting. Memorizing high school math and grammar sounds daunting. But, you know, the path of GMAT preparation is going to be a very difficult one. And honestly, sometimes it just has, it will feel like it has more valleys than peaks. I know that there are times when people are going to want to take their GMAT book and throw it out the window in frustration and all that stuff. But really, it's about just sort of collecting yourself and being able to put yourself in that mindset of not just, you know, not just doing well on a test, but to essentially just be confident enough to say, I'm going to go into that room and I'm going to showcase my abilities. I'm going to avoid doing poorly. No, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to win. I'm going to showcase my abilities, my reasoning abilities, and business schools are going to want me. I mean, really, I know that's sounding a little bit hokey maybe, but honestly, it's that kind of strong attitude that's going to be a huge difference for many test takers.
Well, I know I'm frequently asked, what score should I aim for? And my standard answer is you should aim for an 800.
Yeah.
You know, I never remember going into for a test and aiming for anything less than 100. Obviously, I dealt with a lot of scores that were less than 100, but I think I was a better student because I just went in and tried to ace it.
Yeah.
Once you get the score, then you deal, and there might be scores that are competitive that are, for all schools, there are scores that are competitive that are less than 800, but you go in and you aim for an 800.
Absolutely. Go in there and do the very best you can to go in there and say, I am going to – my goal of sitting here in this room for 4 hours is to do the very best that I can. Every student puts in different effort. Every student starts at a different place, but, you know, it's going to be about, like, I want to maximize my abilities. Think about where you started at and say, I've come a long way. These last 3 months, the better I do, the better my applications are going to look. And that's motivation right there, right? So keep yourself motivated with that attitude. And not just the better chance of getting in, but also the better chances for example, merit-based financial aid.
Absolutely.
It's largely based on GMAT scores. It's not
absolutely
as much based on transcripts.
Right. Again, it's those bragging rights. Okay. Any last advice for graduate school applicants about to take one of these exams?
No. I think just the things I've mentioned before, knowing the tests inside out is going to be an advantage to you. Start early in your preparation. We want to get, you know, at Kaplan, we, you know, have a lot of different free events, seminars, workshops designed to give students all the sort of, you know, additional information about, you know, for instance, creating great personal statements or timing strategies for these exams. Of course, we offer our comprehensive programs. I've been a Kaplan teacher for about 10 years. I've taught, I forget the exact number. We do keep track of these, but somewhere along the lines of about 6,000 students in my time here. And I will say, I mean, I enjoy my work on the product team managing our curriculum and content, but I certainly, whenever possible, I do try to get FaceTime with the students. I love being in front of a classroom. I love seeing the people that our products are meant to help. And so for me, that's extremely rewaring. The same things I'll say at the end here are the same things I tell my own students. You know, the more you practice, the more confident you'll be. You will not get every single question right in class, but every mistake that you make in class makes you more likely to avoid making that mistake on test day.
Yeah, what was Thomas? Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And that alone, I think, spurs students on to, because you're so used to, like, in class being, you have to be the best in class. Otherwise, you don't raise your hand. You don't show off. You don't do that. But it's like, no, we learn from our mistakes together in a class, and therefore that's going to make someone much more confident in their practice. And again, it's a difficult process. So start early, get as much information as possible. You know, certainly, you know, be efficient, because we don't want people taking a GRE course and be like, wait, you know what, I should take a GMAT. Yeah, like we certainly don't want that, because that's lost time, that's lost opportunity as well. Get as much information up front and be confident that you're making an informed decision on how you're prepping for this test.
Great. Thank you so much, Arthur. Thank you so much for joining me today. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. They were wonderful. Where can listeners and potential applicants learn more about Kaplan's GMAT and GRE prep?
Sure. They can visit our website. It is at www.kaptest.com, K-A-P-T-E-S-T.com, and then you can get information about all of our programs. We are also on Twitter. At the handle Kaplan Grad Prep for information about the GRE, and Kaplan GMAT Prep for information about the GMAT. So we update our Twitter constantly, giving links to study tips, things that we're hearing from admissions officers, and we're also on Facebook as well. You can find us via our Facebook site as well, facebook.com/Kaplan Grad Prep and facebook.com/Kaplan GMAT.
Great. We'll include links in the show notes at info.accepted.com/78 to the sites Arthur just mentioned, as well as to related articles and show notes. Listener, thank you, too, for joining Arthur on and me for our 78th episode. If you find the show worthwhile, please share the good word by leaving a review on iTunes. Your doing so helps us spread the news about Admission Straight Talk, especially if you leave a 5-star feedback. So, if you think AST deserves those 5 shiny, glittering stars, please let iTunes know. There's a link in the show notes to our iTunes page where you can leave a review. And if you have a question for me, please ask it at info.accepted.com/78 or by sending an email to questions@accepted.com. Thanks again for coming. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.